these meds might not work at some point, and I might have to switch.
Right. It's like, are they working today? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the whole thing is people are like, my God, I'm going to be 99 getting hooked on these meds and pharmaceuticals and big pharma. And I'm just like, yeah, but do you feel better?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 115 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Mason, and today we are joined by my good friend, Jeremy Fall. Jeremy is an amazing dude, an entrepreneur, a restaurateur, and really just really a great all-around human. One of my homies, so it's always great to have friends on the show and get to learn new things about them, about their journey. You know, I think I've always been really inspired by Jeremy's entrepreneurial attitude, even from a young age, and just the LA club scene, moving to restaurants, nightlife. You know, I think he's done a lot of different things and continues to, but I think really at the through line of what he does is really bring people together and really foster a lot of conversation and a lot of community. And I think now, you know, he's appreciating his mental health more and is starting to weave some of those elements through it, which I think is always beautiful. So it was really great to have him on finally and get to chat a little bit. And excited for you guys to check it out. Enjoy the show. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Jeremy Fall.
It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, man. It's great to have you in.
I don't think people realize how close we are in terms of as far as friends.
Yeah, man. It's I always love having like friends on. Just feel like able to have such more authentic, organic conversations, less prep, you know, just smooth. Yeah. Smooth. I think like one of the things I was so excited to talk to you about is like, I feel like you've accomplished so many different things and like worked in so many different industries and areas, started being an entrepreneur at a young age, sort of have just like, you know, your hands in so many different parts of culture, I guess. And I feel like that's very unique, especially at such a young age. And just sort of like for you right now, I guess, if someone doesn't know who you are, like how would you sort of describe who you are, what you do, like sort of where you're at these days?
I was actually having this conversation yesterday while I was getting my...
how do I need to talk about
when when I was getting my tag with piece, Dr. Yeah. Wu, yeah. I was like, we were talking about that. It's interesting because for me, my biggest struggle has been trying to define that. I think, you know, my brain is extremely creative and that's how I am. But it also being an entrepreneur and I guess just like being business-minded, like I think in a linear way sometimes. And that makes it difficult because I think outside the box and then try to bring it inside a box, right? So it's really difficult. So, you know, as far as defining what I do, you know, most people know me as a chef restaurateur, right? I had 14 restaurants across the country. That's definitely been the biggest impact my career has had.
Food
in general, right? Yeah. Food TV, restaurants, whatever it is. You know, but ultimately, like for me, it was using food as a platform, right? Food is a conduit to conversation. Food is bringing people together through culture, and that's a hard thing to really convey to people because either food is fuel for a part of the world, and for other people, it's like, you know, they call themselves, I hate this fucking word, but can I cuss on this?
Yeah.
Okay, like foodies or whatever, but like I fucking hate that word so much, but you know,
what do you prefer instead? Like, what do you wish human, people would say?
Why does it have to be? Imagine saying
like a food fan.
Like I'm a musicy
food
like,
enthusiast what the fuck?
Or fashiony.
I like music.
Would you? If someone said, "Are you a fashionista?" Wouldn't you want to throw up?
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine being like, "I'm a fashionista"? I guess. Who the fuck says
maybe
that?
It just feels weird to say like, "No, I'm into food,"
or "I'm into like, fashion."
Yeah.
I only wear Mad Happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You only wear black.
I'm a Mad Happy-ista. You know what I mean? Like, no, but that's the whole thing is like, you know, for those people, it's not like, those people that we won't name, like, I'm put in a box, right? For people, because when you're in food and you're a chef, like, there's nothing else you can do, right?
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, it's an industry that's been interesting because chefs in the beginning, it was really, or people in the restaurant business, it was a job that you did because you didn't go to school or... It was a job to pay the bills, right? And I mean, still to this day, a lot of people are like, it's one of the only careers where they're like, well, you know, I'll probably like pick up a couple of serving shifts or bartending shifts to pay the bills. It's like so weird. Could you imagine being like, I'm going to pick up a couple of like like design,
yeah,
you know, fashion design shifts. Yeah. Like it's not a thing, right?
No.
So it's made our industry very complex because it's parts, it's very, very much survival, right? And then the creation of the celebrity chef happened.
Mm.
And it was like,
which was like, when, like what year was that? And like, sort of, how did that even start?
That's a good question. So there, I see it in two ways, right? Yeah. And, you know, Shep Gordon.
Yeah.
So he was like the initiator of like the Emeril Lagasse's and that world. And there's a couple of them like that, right? I see that there being a rebirth with like Top Chef and and less like, you know, the Emeril Lagasse. It was like a younger generation. All of a sudden, like chefs had like fucking tattoos and were young and were like cool. Yeah. Before they were kind of like these like older men.
Yeah, it was like Wolfgang Puck.
It's yeah,
like
exactly.
Chefs I can remember.
Exactly. Like, and then all of a sudden they're just like tattooed like dudes, and there's like everyone's getting like a knife tattooed on their fucking arm, and they're just like
butchers, knives everywhere. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. And it's just like badass, and chef became like rock star, right? The chef thing became rock star. It's the only position in the world, by the way, where the word celebrity is attached to it. No one says celebrity musician,
right?
It's like I've always wondered why it had to be celebrity chef. I think it's because you have to separate into categories.
Yeah,
like, wait, is he a chef? Like, he just works like at the fucking stand.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's like in any way sort of diminished the actual like art and talent and skill of like, oh, he's like a celebrity chef. It's more like a social personality than like an actual sort of like artist in that way.
Yeah, dude, I've never labeled myself a chef. There's actually interviews where I say I'm not a chef. Like I've done a lot of those. I end up just saying it like I just said it because before I would go into this whole thing, I'm like, well, no, I'm not sure. I'm a restaurateur. And it's just like, I'm like, at this point, I'm like, fuck, I'm just Jeremy. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I that's a great question. It has diminished it to a certain extent because it's categorized like you're a TV chef. So you're just like, you know, you're fluff.
Yeah.
Or you're like a real fucking like in the trenches chef. Like, but with that said, you know, there's so many categories within that. But like when I, you know, I did a cooking show with Miguel, you know, Beats for Breakfast on Facebook Watch. And it's like, it was a music show. And I was telling people in the beginning, I'm like, oh, so I do a dish and he does a beat. And like, they work together. Like we get inspired by each other. Like the way he adds certain things to the beat, it's like the equivalent of like heat in a dish and like spice and all that stuff. And people were like, so confused what it would look like. That was a really cool idea. It was a fun idea, but it hadn't been done. So people were very much like confused by it.
Yeah.
To me, it seemed like, you know, when the idea started and Miguel's like kitchen, he thought about it and he'd like hit me up about it and stuff. But like, to me, I was just like, this makes sense.
Yeah.
My last restaurant before I got acquired was called Mixtape, and it was a collaboration with Quincy Jones and Jaden Smith and Vic Mensa and a bunch of different artists, right?
Yeah.
They were different, and I had them all do things that were outside their medium, like sketches, like Serge Tankian from System of a Down did the statue made of Yamaha keyboards, right?
Sick.
Which was a lamp.
Yeah.
So, like, people were just like, is this a gallery? I'm like, sure, but they're like, it's a restaurant. Like, can you just pick a... And I'm just like, why do these things have to be defined?
Yeah.
So that's very much what I'm into now. Like, you know, I've gotten to Web3, like, you know, the fucking... I got into Web3 as an extension of what I was doing. I was like, this is a way of tokenizing collectible things. I've always been in that collectible world. Even when I was doing food, I was dropping, you know, donuts for like 300 kids like on Fairfax, like just similar to what we do, like we're in a very similar world,
totally.
Just, and there's no reason why like food and fashion don't do all the time. Like there's a Siddell's at Kith, there's like you know what I mean, and it's so weird that people try to define these things.
I feel like people love to just sort of like box people in or like label people, or you know, you stay in your lane here, you stay in your lane here. It's all sort of like neat and orderly, you know. But I think that's one of the biggest things that's so inspiring, like for me, about like what you've done is really blend all those lines of, you know, food, nightlife, like entertainment, community, tokens, fashion, music, like all these things. Like, where did it really, really start? I mean, you grew up in LA and like you even opened up your first couple businesses like when you were a teenager, right?
Yeah. I mean, yes, that's true. And I appreciate the kind words. It's just, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I my mom was managing a cafe off Skid Row. Like we actually lived in the, like the above, there's like a, almost like a giant storage room that was like turned into a loft basically. Mm-hmm. And then, so I worked there, like, you know, the whole thing, like busboy server. When I was
like, this
kid.
Is like what, like 12, 13?
11.
Like,
yeah. Child labor laws are fine because it was my mother. But You know, I started in that, and then
you're just like soaking it all up.
Yeah, and by the way, at this point, I'm like 6 feet tall. Yeah, keep that in mind, because I'm now 6'7".
People think you're like 20
for the video. People that see us on video, they're getting a lot of leg just from my position right now. So I was like, you know, I was old or whatever.
Yeah,
and then I had this idea, and this is typical. Like we grew up in Los Angeles, like just absolute insanity, like just whatever. But I was like, you know, I had this idea to do this like all age nightclub for kids that are like 12 to 17, right? Like the same thing. And now I'm like, what the fuck?
Was Shirley Temples.
No, it was Red Bull cocktails.
Arnold Palmer's, yeah.
They were like wired on water bottles and Red Bull cocktails, and like you had to pay at the door. I don't know if you ever came to any of them because you grew up here.
I don't know if I did.
Yeah, but like you probably, you would have gotten it.
I wasn't cool enough, yeah.
No, you would have gotten, you would have never waited in line. But like the first one I did, it was like, you know, I had like a big dream. So I went to the Avalon and I was like, let's do this on a Monday. And they're like, okay, why not? You know, and it was like, the first one was a disaster and it bombed. 250 people went, which by the way, sounds like, whoa, that's actually a success. Yeah. The venue is 2,000 people.
Yeah.
I wasn't good at like figuring out those kinds of things at the time.
Yeah.
But did a couple, they did okay. But the Avalon was like, look, like you have really great ideas. I was like, yeah, oh, thank you, whatever. I kind of need an internship. By the way, I'm in high school. They're like, oh, okay. You know, that stayed pretty confidential during that time because this is like I wasn't supposed to work in a club.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, so there's this new music genre. It's called electro. It's like, you know, like Dim Mock Tuesdays was happening. I don't know if you remember those with like Steve Aoki down at Cinespace, which I ended up, by the way, taking over years later, became one of my places. But I was like, this is the new movement because, like, my family lives in Paris, so I've been really connected to, like, French music and, you know, Justice and Daft Punk and Busy P and all these artists were doing these things in Paris. And I was like, we should bring that here. And with, like, this, like, really small budget that I negotiated, we, like, got some French artists. And then the electro movement
started to
was
take
fucking
off.
Massive.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Avalon was a big gallery of that because it was a big platform for it, because then we had Hardfest and all these different things that started happening that we're working with.
Where did you, like, just to stop you there, like, where did you get that sort of like drive and determination and like, you know, intuitiveness to like just sort of go make it happen? Like, where do you think that came from, and how did you have so much like confidence as a kid? I feel like now so many kids are like insecure. Obviously social media wasn't as popping back then, but like, where do you feel like that really came from within you to take so much like initiative at such a young age?
So it's really funny you ask that. I struggle with like severe anxiety. I have a massive anxiety disorder. I'm medicated. I've only been medicated for a few years. In retrospect, it's not that long with how long I've had it for. Mm-hmm. So I was not confident at all. I was very anxious, and I wonder that sometimes because I'm like, I think the anxiety is what, it was so blinding.
That it was like a motivator in some way.
That it was a motivator. Like, I think I was so blinded by the anxiety that I didn't even think like what not to do it.
Like, oh shit, yeah.
I thought about all the scenarios that would happen if it failed and spiraled over and over again. But I don't think I even had the mental capacity to not do it because I think I was blinded by my own anxiety.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But it is like a superpower. Like, we use that term all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I was not confident. Like, I actually didn't have much confidence and still struggle sometimes with some aspects of business. Like, sometimes I go back into these things where I'm like, shit, like, maybe should I define more what I do? Like, should I just be a chef? Like, taking all these risks, and then, like, some people are like, you know. But it really was, like, a weird, like, motivator of sorts, not being confident and being super anxious. I think it was maybe to, like, prove to myself that I could do shit.
Yeah. Did you have, like, the support sort of from your... from your family and like friends, or like was it more like a you like sort of on your own, or like what was your community like at the time?
It was really on my own, you know. I grew up with a single mom.
Yeah.
You know, not affluent or anything at all. But
yeah.
It was really just like a me thing. And I think it's because I struggled with so much insecurity. Like, when I was younger, I had like really long hair and I was made fun of. People would call me a girl all the time. It's funny because I'm just like giant, like hairy beast now. but like, you know, I think like I was so insecure and like so much confidence, and like growing up with a mother, I had like feminine mannerisms.
Yeah.
And, you know, people called me gay all the time, and I was like so confused going through all this shit that like I was just very much like, I'm going to do this entrepreneurial. I wanted to make money. I think it was a lot of that was also like independence. Like, money could be like, I could do my own shit, it would prove, it's like a point system that proves validation success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I later on became more emotionally mature and realized that like money is not the metric for the validation. But at the time, that's what, you know, it was just like, you know, like,
I mean, you were living on Skid Row, you said.
I'm going to be a rags to riches dude. Like, yeah. So it's like, that was also the era where like all these rappers were like, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, I'm just going to be one of them. Like,
make it out. Yeah,
exactly.
No. And then, so what was your sort of first like break, I guess, after you started working with Avalon, or like, how did that sort of like balloon into like being able to raise money and start your own businesses and projects? And like, when did it sort of crystallize of like, oh, this is now something real that I'm going to pursue?
I think the biggest lesson I learned from being like working in nightlife was that perception matters more than reality.
Mm.
When I was seeing the biggest celebrities in the world have their cards decline when they were doing bottle service, I was like, okay, this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
So I was like,
I feel like that's true for a lot of like elements in the city for sure.
Yeah. And I was like, anyone can bullshit. I can bullshit too.
Yeah.
And I used that to my advantage.
Yeah.
And it really became a perception thing. And I really tried to build it. I discovered social media very early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, I had Friendster.
Yeah.
Like, and then I had MySpace. And then I was like, wait, so this metric of friends is something that's easily manipulated by just clicking on buttons and waiting for people to accept. Yeah. It wasn't followers and following back then. It was just friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, so if I have 10,000 friends, I have influence.
Right. Like,
and
the, I was like the social currency of it all.
Right. And I was like, can I just click for that? So I just spent hours clicking.
It's like, I'll add everybody. Yeah.
That's literally what we did. And then like, I was like, wait. And then I posted stuff on like it was called like bulletin boards or some shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, of like these events, and people would like come, and I was like, why doesn't everyone do this? Like, it was, you know, and then obviously social media grew from there, but it's kind of how I started my following.
Yeah.
At that base level, it was just like, you know, there's this narrative that we're looking at. Like, there was a way to manipulate to a certain extent. And like, and then I was like, wait, is this bad? And I literally realized that that's called marketing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm just marketing myself.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot there in the whole sort of like fake it till you make it mindset, especially in terms of just like mental health, entrepreneurship, growing up, like becoming an adult, all these things. Is like, you know, even I've learned now, it's like, you know, when I'm 28 right now, when I was 22, 23, I would look at someone who was my age currently and be like, oh my God, like this person has it all figured out or whatever. They know everything, all this shit. And then, you know, now being at that age, it's like, no, like we still don't know anything. And I think it's made me have so much more empathy for like, you know, my parents who like, however old they were at the time, were like, whatever, had some childhood hardships and whatnot. But it's really just like there's no right or wrong way to sort of do this thing. And I feel like often people wait until there's like a moment where like, oh, I feel like I'm ready, or I learned this, or I know this, instead of just sort of having the mentality of like, you know, I'm just going to go and, you know, sort of try and figure it out and like make my way. You know what I mean?
100%. And that mentality that you're talking about is, I think, what goes back to your original question is like, how do you do different things? Like, I don't think about these limitations really. Like, just for example, in New York, right? Just did this like massive event in New York. I collaborated with Adidas. I launched a new pizza brand. We did like a truck. That pizza brand is under my record label. So I co-own a record label with Warner Records.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it a Web3 major label, but it's an imprint under Warner. So I released a pizza concept with Warner Records and collaborated with Adidas, where we did branded boxes and really cool shit. And there was like a way you could take home a digital collectible that was this leftover pizza, but it was digital and like all this stuff, right? My friend Vic Mensa actually performed as well. And it's like, when you think about it, it's like, you know, I dropped a pizza concept with one of the world's biggest labels, one of the world's biggest fashion apparel
company. Yeah, it's like with
And people are like, "What? Like, how is that possible?" And I'm like, you know, I'm like, "Well, there aren't a lot of people out there that could do that." And not because I'm saying that because I'm smarter.
Yeah,
it's because I've built this creative playground that allows me to do just weird shit. I don't even think that's that weird, but like creative shit. And like, why not do that? You know, why does it have to be so much insulin? And people were just like freaking out about this. Like, I'm eating this box. It's like an Adidas box. And it's this. And there's music involved. And there's digital. And there's food. And there's fashion. It's like, yeah, like you could do that, you know?
Yeah.
I think Virgil proved that a lot.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
just like blurring lines.
Blurring lines. You know, creative freedom. Like,
yeah.
I think it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
Where you know, like, and he was known for that.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, it took someone that has so much star power with the Kardashians and Kanye and everything mixed with talent.
Yeah.
To really prove to the world that you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah. It's like kick down those doors.
Exactly. And he's still an exception in the eyes of people. It's like, why are we so far behind?
Yeah. No, totally. And I know you brought up sort of your experience with like anxiety and like that a disorder. And I'm curious, like when did you first notice that? Obviously now I'm sure in hindsight, you notice it a lot younger than you might have been conscious of. But what was your first sort of conscious moment where you're like, hey, I'm sort of struggling with this thing, or oh, not everyone's feeling like this? Or like, when were you, did you really become like aware of it?
I've always knew I had it. I was very anti-medication. I thought medication would take away my creativity. Mm-hmm. And that was my fear. Mm-hmm. And then when it got to like 2019, it was really bad. Like driving, and I'm seeing like it's green. I actually talked about that. I have a book coming out called Falling Upwards. Mm-hmm. That's about mental health, creativity, modern day masculinity.
Yeah. You know,
dude that wears nail polish that fucking talks about mental health. It's like a pretty rare thing. So I was like, this could be a cool.
I love that.
Cool book idea.
Yeah.
But I'm like talking about this thing where I'm like driving and it's like the light's green and I'm like fucking having anxiety that's going to go yellow. And what am I going to do when it turns yellow? Am I going to stop? Am I going to go? I'm like, and it was just so crippling that I had to like pull over and be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I almost couldn't control my hands were doing. I was accelerating. I was swerving in traffic. Like, it sounds dramatic, but it was like completely exactly how it was.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, this is now affecting potential physical abilities to do things. That's what crippling anxiety is.
Manifesting itself into the real world, actually. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Then very quickly, shortly after, actually in the book, like the first chapter is I'm at the Rock Nation brunch and I was just like, this is like a super cool, like peak kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I was signed to Rock Nation too. And I was just like so miserable. I like left. Didn't see anybody. And I was driving
home. Irish exited Rock Nation brunch.
I mean, you know, can we make that the headline? But no, but I like left and I did that swerving episode. And I remember being like, and this was actually, I believe January, February of 2020. Mm. So right before fucking
COVID. Yeah.
And then I was just so anxious that I was just like, fuck, this is like destroying me. Then we got hit with the pandemic. I was left to be at home and just
really deal with it.
And and then, you know, so I had started right before COVID, and then COVID just was like gasoline on the fire.
Yeah.
I started medication like in April.
Yeah.
Started therapy medication like right after. I really nipped it in the bud pretty quickly.
Yeah. I was super like turned off by medication also for a lot of my life. Like I was prescribed like Adderall as like a young teenager. And I think, you know, that sort of had its own ups and downs. And then I was always sort of just so anti, like thinking that it was like, oh, I don't need this, or, you know, I'm not clinically XYZ, or, you know, something innately really trying to like fight it for so long. And then I think, you know, I did have like a pretty severe like rock bottom back like a little over 5 years ago. And it was just like, you know, my dad like gave me this advice of just like if there's something out there that's proven to help you, you know, like it's worth just trying to see if it will help you. You know what I mean? There's nothing to be too proud of or scared of, or, oh, I'm fearful that it might take away my creativity. All right, let's try it for 3 months. Did it take away my creativity? Yes. All right, I'll stop and figure something out. No. All right, great. It didn't. You know what I mean? Like, it's like allowing ourselves to try these things and be patient and be open. I feel like something with anxiety is like it can be so limiting of like, we will convince ourselves of outcome 2, 3, 4, 5 down the line before we've even tried thing one. And I think it can keep us like so stuck. And even with like big personal decisions for me now, I really try and remind myself of like, there's nothing finite with these choices. Even now, like in the last year, I've been getting off some of my medication, right? And I'm like keeping an open mind as to like, you know, I don't make a decision one day and this is what I'm deciding for the rest of my life. It's like, hey, I'm interested in this. Let's try these things out. Let me be honest. Let me lean on my support system. Let me see what works. Let me see what doesn't. And then, you know, it's every day we're continuing to like turn up and down our levels of life, which I feel like has been really freeing and not so stuck in like a, all right, are you doing medication or are you not? You know what I mean? There's so much more nuance to that conversation.
And you've been getting off of your meds?
Yeah, I've fully tapered off a medication of which was like my antidepressant, and then I'm still on like an anti-anxiety medication. I found for me, like, I started like working out for the first time in my life like 3, 4 months ago. So just really with like nutrition, diet, and sleep, have been able to sort of like come up with a little like depression cocktail for me. You know, I think before it was like I was, you know, I would go sometimes 2-3 days without showering because I wasn't even like breaking a sweat. So like, I'm like, oh, I don't smell, like, you know what I mean? Or just like things like that. Like I wasn't releasing those endorphins naturally and things like that. And, you know, just going on runs or lifting weights or doing these other things that are so like clinically proven to be beneficial to your mental health, you know, eating better, right? The gut is our second brain. It's like the gut health has the biggest impact on your mental health. So like, you know, I was eating like Shake Shack, like, you know, and all these other like Chick-fil-A and fast foods, which are amazing. I love them.
Dude.
I know.
Shake Shack.
I know. But I was like, dude, I gotta like, when I started eating better, I started feeling better, you know, and it has nothing to do with taste and preference. It just has to do with really like feeling and the way that your body like reacts to these foods. So that's how I've been sort of trying it so far, and it's taken a long time, obviously, and I've been patient with it. But I think it's like such a process for everyone.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Working out is something that I've started recently as well.
Yeah.
And it really does help.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And I mean, and you've been sober for a while too, which I know that's like, so I mean, I'm sure you agree with this, but it's really like the personal cocktail thing that you, mm-hmm. you describe. It's like, there isn't really one recipe for it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do food puns, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm
just like, only.
There's
yeah.
only food puns. It's a personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
Get your ingredients.
Yeah. Like, I can't meditate.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Yeah.
Fucking, like, I just can't.
Yeah.
And maybe I could one day, but it doesn't. But it doesn't mean that I have
can't
to, like,
today, and that's fine.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that I have to force trying to meditate into because I hear, like, everyone has their own thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's lost. It's like, you're pro or you're anti. Like you're saying you're pro, you're anti medication. You're pro. Like, it's like, why can't you just, you know, it doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Or it does.
Yeah. I think there is like a lot of power and freedom in that patience and that open mindedness of like, you know, I think it even stems back to what we're saying about like labeling, you know, everything that our minds naturally are just like black or white, right or wrong, yes or no. And there's like, I'm really trying to live my life like in the middle, like in the gray area of like all these sorts of things. I think that's the beauty and the curse of mental health is like, it's not one size fits all. And that's why it's so hard because you can't just look up what is the answer to the question. All right, let me do this. It really takes active work. It's not anything you can buy. It's not anything you can subscribe to. It's not anything that you can just acquire. And it really does take patience and work of like, all right, let me look up, here are 10 best practices, journaling, meditation, gratefulness, working out, sleep, all these things, right? It's like you have to try all of them and you have to see some of them are going to work great for you and some of them aren't, but you really can't know until you try. And, you know, through that now it's like I've found sort of my like mental health cocktail of like what sort of works for me and like how I live my life. What do you feel like your sort of like mental health cocktail is, I guess?
It's not AI driven.
Yeah.
As much as you'd think that. But I actually, can I say something before that?
Please.
So if you, because you said Shake Shack.
Yeah. Right? I love Shake Shack.
Right. And then you said like you slowed down.
Yeah.
Eating Shake Shack. And then I realized we were going to see each other a couple months ago.
Yeah.
I did a collab with Shake Shack.
Yeah.
By Southwest.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a white truffle dinner.
Yeah.
Shake Shack. And you were invited.
Yeah.
And did not come.
This is true.
Now it makes sense. I feel like had I been doing maybe not white truffle, maybe if I was doing like a, I don't know, like a chickpea.
Sweet green collab.
I didn't want to, I wanted to not name more brands, but I just realized that. I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Now this makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow.
How was that, by the way?
Well, it was lonely without you,
yeah.
But it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like, everyone was just like looking where I'm like, I think he's coming.
No, and I think I like food even for me has become such a, you know, like that was a big motivator of like me sort of getting healthy. Of like, I got pretty
Is
much.
Is that why you didn't come?
No.
Okay. That's not why I wanted to make sure we were on the same
page. I like 4 months ago, I weighed like 200 pounds. It was like the heaviest that I've ever weighed. And I really just like was putting a lot of my sobriety in other areas into like food and like overeating of like, you know, stop watching porn, stop acting out with my sex and love addiction, stop drinking, stop smoking weed, all these other things. And it's like, all right, what's going to feel really good is like just stuffing my face, you know? And like that, I think it worked for a long time until it's like, all right, now that area is sort of getting out of control. Now I need to sort of like rein that back in. And like, there's all these like, you know, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, like those are all our different like you know, like infinity stones on our ring. And it's like, you know, every single one of those needs attention and energy and care and like time spent on it to really, like, that is our whole like mental health, not even mental, that is our whole like health circle. And I think I really learned this year, especially, that like not one or other is any higher or lower. They're sort of all of these things that we have to be looking at and like checking in with on a daily basis. And like, you know, for me, at least being like an addict, it's like, all right, this one's in check, this one gets out of hand. It's like fucking whack-a-mole. You know what I mean? And I think I really needed to look at that. And yeah, I'm like halfway to my goal, like fitness wise, which is great. And yeah, man.
I'm proud of you, man.
Thanks, dude. So when you said that you like started the therapy and medication, like right as COVID started or something.
Yeah.
Was right that your first time in like therapy?
Like officially, yes.
Yeah.
Like actually doing it weekly, which I still do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first like really
nice.
And it's funny because it wasn't because of COVID.
Yeah.
I was going to do it, but it ended up working out perfectly.
It was when Jay didn't say hi to you at the brunch and you were just
I was like,
I got to get out of here.
Dude, this is not the vibe. Like, I need to leave and go straight into a session, you know?
How did you go about finding someone?
I asked for recommendations. I got really lucky. I asked for a recommendation. The first person I quote unquote interviewed, I guess, where the fuck, like, just worked. It's been amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you've been with them since?
Yeah. I mean, we FaceTime every week. Never met her in person, but FaceTime every week.
What do you feel like, just, you know, off the top of the dome, like what have been the biggest like blessings for you from being in therapy now for like 3+ years?
She wasn't necessarily convinced I needed medication in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And she referred me to a psychiatrist. And my psychiatrist is just as amazing. And I have a psychiatrist that's not even like necessarily pro medication in your face. Like that's what's crazy. And like, not like I have to see you like every week. Like, and these two women were just like really helped me in a very honest way, like realized that I fucking was worth trying it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm on Lexapro.
Yeah.
And it's just so, it's changed my life completely.
Yeah. What was sort of their like their pitch or like their take that sort of got you over your fear of medication? Was it just like you were sort of desperate and were willing to do anything to sort of feel better? Or
yeah, I think because, you know, because of COVID, I didn't have all these restaurants. Like, we'd gone acquired, right, before COVID. So, like, I didn't have restaurants to go to. So I was just like, cool.
Like, if that side of life became a lot quieter.
Right. And I was like, if I lose my creativity and all this stuff, like, I can just get off of it.
Yeah.
And people are like, but what if you're hooked and you stay on it forever? And I'm like, okay, so let's say a scenario, I'm quote-unquote hooked and I have to take it forever. So you're telling me, like, I have to swallow a pill forever versus having to deal with crippling anxiety? Yeah. Like, I'll take the fucking pill.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is, like, it's 2 seconds.
And that's like letting the anxiety win too, by the way, of like, all right, I'm going to hold myself back from the potential of something because of a thought that's not based in reality that I'm letting myself have.
Very eloquently put.
Yeah.
That is very true.
Yeah.
I thought it that way and I was like, all right, cool. And then it was extremely difficult. Like, I went through the worst case scenario medication. The first one didn't work. I was like almost fainting. I had to switch. You know, it's like there was like 6 weeks for it to kick in. It didn't kick in for me after like 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the shower and I was literally just like, there was this thing that bothered me with this like old friend that said something to me. And I was like, I felt like anxious for days and weeks. And it was just like horrible. I'm like, this guy is just this and this and this. And then I was like on these meds during this happening. And then I was in the shower and like one day I was just like thinking about it. And I just thought about it and I was like, oh, it sucks. And I just moved on. I was like, whoa. I was like, there's no spiral. The anxious thought comes, but the spiral disappears. And I was just like, holy shit.
Right, right.
This is insane.
Right.
And then I was just like, well, I'll think about anything now.
Like, is it working? Is it working?
Yeah.
It working?
And then, you know, and it's a work in progress. Like,
always.
You know, these meds might not work at some point. And I might have to switch.
Right. It's like, are they working today? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the whole thing is people are like, my God, I mean, 99, hooked on these meds and pharmaceuticals and big pharma. And I'm just like, yeah, but do you feel better?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Mental health is what brought you and I together, by the way.
It is, yeah. I mean, we met through a mutual friend, but then I think really connected through mental health. And I think, you know, it's not often to find men who are so, like, vulnerable and sort of willing to have these conversations, I guess. I know I know you brought up the book. Like, what was the idea for that? Like, right. How long has that been in the works for?
And we're also part of a super secret club.
Yeah, well, yeah, we can't really talk about that. Yeah,
well, yeah. We are.
Yeah.
But we can't actually talk about it. But we share some similar issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book. Yeah, so it's called Falling Upwards. I started writing it in December of 2020. So the book is... So everyone I talk about the book, they're like, oh, it's a cookbook. I'm like, that's exactly what I'm trying to prevent. So it is
so there's
not,
no recipes in it, is what you're saying?
No, yeah. No recipes. It's not a cookbook. It is...
You should have a tagline. It's like, Falling Upwards, like the recipe of life.
It actually... The byline is living the dream one panic attack at a time.
Nice, I like that.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And by the way, did you get the Falling Upwards pun?
Yeah, well, yeah.
My last name.
Yeah. There you go.
Right.
That's good.
Witty as shit.
That's good.
So anyway.
ChatGPT help you with that one?
No. This was before.
Yeah.
If ChatGPT would have written my whole book, like I wouldn't even be. I'd be on book.
You'd be on
six.
The third installment. Yeah.
So. So basically, the concept is it's 10 chapters, 10 essays. I don't know if I mean to be supposed to be talking about this. I just realized, but who cares?
Yeah, whatever.
And it's just, and they're basically stories.
That's amazing.
About like my life, and then they're tied to lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. This actually, by the way, I just realized this is like publicly like on Amazon or whatever. So
yeah.
But it's basically like every chapter is a story I learned based off a story. Like,
sick.
And sorry, a lesson I learned based off a story. So it's like, This learned perception matters more than reality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And and the underlying themes are mental health, creativity, and modern day masculinity. Because
I love that piece. Yeah.
Right. It's interesting because when I was like writing it, I didn't write it for men.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the publisher was like, this is going to be very interestingly geared towards men.
Yeah.
Or women who want their, you know, husbands or boyfriends or whatever.
Sons, like, whatever. Yeah.
Yes. To read it. And I was just like, wow, that's really interesting because that's not at all how it was intended. But I guess naturally those themes are there.
Comes out of you. Yeah.
I'm a straight man that wears nail polish.
Yeah.
That has feminine mannerisms.
Yeah.
That has mental health issues. Yeah. That's, you know what I mean? Also like quote unquote, like 6'7" and scruffy and like,
right.
This whole
walking anomaly.
It's also like this, like this expected masculine identity because of the way I also look and because I'm like in this position that's like entrepreneurial and all that stuff. So like a lot of things are expected of me. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I started painting my nails, people were like, huh. Or when I, and you were in nail polish,
like 100%.
It's not crazy. Like, you know what I mean? We don't even think about it, but it's like, and when I was growing up, it was like, you care about clothes. Like I was considered metro.
Yeah.
Like, remember that term metro?
Yeah, I do.
Who the fuck says metro?
Yeah.
You were probably metro.
Yeah.
Right?
Super.
We were like in our own group.
Yeah.
We would have been friends back then. Yeah. It's like, you know, and it's just, it's interesting, but I, you know, my goal is for people to read this and be like, okay, like the creative boundaries shouldn't exist. Mental boundaries shouldn't exist. And it's like, it's a very raw take on it. It's like a no bullshit take. It's not like chapter one, like start with an idea. It's not any of that. It's really real shit.
What does like a modern day man sort of like look like to you, or like what are sort of the principles or foundational elements of sort of that idea of like the picture that you're trying to paint there?
And that's the thing. Like the truth is, I don't think it's one.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a version of it. I think like, you know, you look back to like the 60s and 70s, like it's like, like Mad Men, for example. It's like the fucking the suit guy with the slick back hair smoking a cigarette, like the man, the sole breadwinner, like you know what I mean, like that kind of stuff. I'm just like, Jesus, like that. First of all, obviously sexism aside, and we could go into that for hours, and like the problem, like how problematic that shit is.
Yeah,
but that aside, I'm like, it's very interesting to see how androgyny or just like. Not even androgyny necessarily, but just things have become so open, and a lot of it could be attributed, in my opinion, to hip hop and rap.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the fluidity of the culture.
Dude, yes. And I think people don't realize that enough. We're like, so, you know, if you're just someone random, you wear nail polish, like you're categorized as quote unquote gay or metro or whatever the fuck you'll call it. But ASAP Rocky wears nail polish.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, like that's fucking right. You know what I mean, like if you trace back to
like history, Harry Styles, didn't he launch like a nail polish brand or something?
Machine Gun Kelly,
yeah.
And like Harry Styles will wear dresses, and yeah. I mean, Kid Cudi wore like Kurt Cobain, like tribute dress on SNL,
yeah.
And it's like both of those are in like our male quote unquote dominant figures in culture, right?
Yeah.
I was reading the comments on the Cudi thing. I was like, you've got to be joking. The hate and all this stuff. And I'm like, wow, like that's yeah. insane. Like yeah. it's still, and this was recent. Like
for me, like the biggest word that brings up for me is just like vulnerability of like, you know, the ability to open yourself up, be vulnerable and express yourself in a creative and authentic way and not give a shit, you know? And I think like ultimately vulnerability is a huge sign of courage. And when you think about traditionally what it means to like be a man or whatever, mm-hmm. it is like, to have that courage, you know? So I think they are really more closely tied together than people think on the surface. But that, to me, it's like just expressing vulnerability, which is like the bravest thing that you could do.
Yeah, exactly. And we're at a time. And I do think that Gen Z is going to essentially solve this issue is like when we were, and I'm a bit older than you, but like yeah. we come from a generation that's like, we saw the transition from, you know, no internet to internet and all these different and social media and hate and
yeah.
the topic of same sex marriage yeah. and abortion. And we're not that we're not going through that still, right?
Yeah.
We still are.
Yeah, totally.
But the new generation is kind of born in this like, oh, my friend is, yeah, I guess they're trans, I guess. Like
whatever.
They don't think like, about it.
They're just my friend. Yeah.
Exactly. They're like, oh, yeah, I guess if I had to think about it, then yeah, they're trans, but they're like, for us, it was like we had to learn what trans was. Like we had to. There's so many things that happen over time, right? And it's like, I think this generation's amazing. They just like they're born in this like information age. People talk shit. They're like whatever. I'm like, okay, well, they're fucking. They have a view of the world that's so much more open than ours was.
Yeah, I think another thing like when you brought up Virgil earlier, one of my favorite quotes of his is just like, "Youth always wins," you know. And I think like youth is undefeated, and like youth is the culture. And like the more you try and fight it or be like an old head or act like you don't understand it, you know, it's just like kick rocks, like you're not even in it anymore, you know. And I think even I've had to like check myself the last couple of years of like, all right, like I'm even now like not as tapped in or like, sure, I don't get it, but like that's tight, you know. If like if that's what the kids are rocking with, like that's tight. And I think that's always like what's the coolest shit, what's going to drive the needle in arts, music, fashion, culture, food, all this stuff. And I think like for it to be coming from them, a generation who does exhibit all of these sort of qualities that are like kicking down doors and like, you know, hopefully solving whatever this problem is, like you said, it's like that makes me super, super optimistic for the future.
100%. And yeah, like you said, it's just like this very different. We grew up a little bit more exclusivity to things, right? And
totally.
And inclusivity has destroyed exclusivity to an
yeah.
unbelievable degree, yeah. right? Not to say that there isn't a world where both can exist, but when you see, you know, it's like TikTok.
Yeah.
Like I used to be the youngest guy in the room. I was a 16-year-old that was telling the big people, like, I had to fight to prove to people that the youth won.
Yeah.
And that I knew better and stuff. And it was very hard growing up to, like, to be in these rooms of older people that were more experienced than me, you know? And now it's like, I'm the guy who's like, how do I use, like, what do I do on TikTok? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how does it make sense? For, like, all, and I'm just like, dude, when did you become, like, the older dude?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And these, the quote-unquote kids that we're talking about,
yeah,
they're about to be the old ones.
Yeah.
There's this crazy new fucking, I don't know, what comes after Z?
Gen Z's done.
Yeah, no, it's the new, there's a new one now.
I guess Greeks. What else, like, as you think about sort of, like, your future, like, other things you still hope to accomplish, like how do you sort of visualize that, or do you have like, are you a guy with like a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan? Are you day by day, or like with all these different sort of businesses and ideas and industries, how do you sort of, you know, look forward?
I'm a guy with like a 1 to 3 year plan that yeah. changes every day. So
love that.
That's basically what defines me. I'm just like, yeah, this is what I got accomplished for this year. And yeah. then for the next 365
one call could come in that could change
and I'm
everything.
Like, yeah. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah. we're selling jeans. Yeah. like, really, like, you know, or like that's the kind of stuff that I think adapting is important.
Yeah.
You know, I think the future, to be honest, is actually curation.
Yeah.
I think we're in this information age where there's so many options. And I think people that are quote unquote multidisciplinary, multi-hyphenate, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. are the future because, well, one, people are now subscribing. Like I think to me, my theory is people as time passes have put faith aside more and more. And it doesn't mean that like they're not necessarily religious or whatever it is. I personally am not religious, but like, yeah. but we've become human vacuums of subscription. We want to subscribe to things. And I think mm-hmm. that's what Bitcoin made Bitcoin so successful. There's like, there's almost like a religious mm-hmm. thing. It's like, it was dropped down.
The following.
It just, just came out of nowhere. No one else who created it. Yeah. And then it's like the set of beliefs is like it was during when the fucking like the recession stuff, the banks are the enemy. And then it was like, this is the future of what makes us survive, which is currency.
Right? Be a part of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like we want to subscribe to these things that we can't explain that are bigger sets of beliefs that feel bigger than us, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, you know, I think people are going to want to subscribe to people that are more multidisciplinary. Not like I'm going to subscribe to like the chef, the artist, the fashion designer, whatever. It's like I'm going to subscribe to like the set of beliefs that is this person, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and they're going to touch multiple things, mm-hmm. and they're going to curate things for me because there's so much going on, and I'm going to trust them to curate. I'm going to trust them to create, and I think that's what the future is.
Yeah, no, man, I think that's super fire. I got two more.
You like that line, huh?
I do. Yeah,
I just saw you just changed the whole mission statement on the site for Mad Happy.
Before we wrap up, I have two questions for you that we ask every guest. The first one: if you could nominate anyone to come on the show, whether you know them or not, who's been a big inspiration for you in your mental health journey or your career or anyone, who would it be?
I think Cuddy, actually.
That's like my number one.
That's your number one?
Yeah. Like I say that all the time.
I spent a lot of time with him years ago.
Yeah. All right, good. So you'll hook it up after we get off.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't spoken to him in a while. But yeah.
And then lastly, Jeremy, what makes you mad happy?
Oh, dude. You guys ask that for everyone?
You like that?
I think when I've listened, I probably like stopped the recording. I never heard that. I need to finish the episode the whole way. What makes me mad happy? Being here with you.
Let's go, baby.
Has anyone used that before?
No. No. No one likes me as much as you.
I do love you very much. You are actually, I said it's truly like you're one of those people that like I think about all the time and I'm like, I consider you one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
But we don't see each other necessarily talk all the time, but like shit will never change.
No, it's one of those.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Well, I'm A1. glad we can finally do this. Definitely like love you and like love everything you do. And we'll be sure to keep an eye out on the book and all that fun stuff you got coming. And thank you, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Peace out.
Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, means so much to us. Hope you have a great weekend and are enjoying your summers out there wherever you are. And we will be back next week. Thanks so much. Peace.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.